Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
Hey, yo, it's the Fan Morning Show. I'm JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. If you're listening to this, you're among the best of us. You might be among the last of us. I thought about doing a full, like, War of the Worlds.
I was going to say, that could have got a lot darker, and I saw it spewing in your brain, and it's Friday.
Here's the thing. I thought about it, and then I was like, I'm a coward.
This was Monday, different tone.
That's a good take.
Friday, it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. You know, I will say this, that there is like such a sense of relief that it's not just your phone this morning that it's almost worth it. All right. That's my take is that, okay, two things. One, we don't have enough collective experiences anymore. So you're welcome. That's just gratis. From here, from the big red circle. All right. Gave you guys a collective experience. No big deal. That's free. Number two is that, yeah, we all got that collective relief. It's like when you lose something and you find it, it feels so good. Mm-hmm. Feels so good. The best feeling ever, finding something that you thought was lost. Basically, every time I drink
like
and go out and find...
That was like you when you came in tonight. We were like, where's JD? And then he walked in. We're like, ah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, we found him.
Every single time I go to a patio and I come home and the next morning I wake up and I go, oh, this, I definitely left my sunglasses at the bar this time. And then whenever they're there, I'm like, wow, way to go. I'm so proud of myself. So again, sense of relief. So last night's draft, that was one of my favorite drafts ever. Like
hands down,
in any sport.
I don't think I can even bring one to mind that rivals it.
It was incredible. So the crowd was red hot. Honestly, I was having thoughts about how I start to get sometimes, I hate to admit this, okay? But I hate to admit this, but it's just truly how I feel. Habs fans are just such a different breed when it comes to hockey, and they just know how to do it. Like, they just know how to do it. And that atmosphere wouldn't have happened in any other arena other than Montreal. And that's just facts. That's just facts. And, like, you can say whatever you want about your fan base, but just Montreal has that, that je ne sais quoi, all right?
Oh.
That je ne sais quoi
your
about...
Your French is 3,000 times better than anyone's that was spoken on stage last night.
Well, certainly not Bettman. Gary, though, you got to respect... This is the thing. You got to respect Gary for at least giving a shot. You get the Gary Bettman pettiness. He does the wrestling heel. I don't know if that's why.
Another world last night.
I don't know if that's why Josh played the the wrestling intro there, but Gary Bettman had big time wrestler vibes last night, like heel vibes. What are they called? Manager? Are they called managers?
Just call Blake. He knows
the mouthpieces. Yeah, the manager vibe where he comes out and he's just amping up the crowd.
That's all you got.
Then we get LaFleur's son and Bossy's daughter. Going in, like, speaking in French to the crowd, telling them what they mean. The Bossy chant from that Montreal crowd. I can't believe his daughter kept it together. Mm-hmm. That's one of the most impressive.
I just got chills. Yeah.
I full out cried.
Oh.
Oh, this is what's crazy. So I'm like laughing at Bettman. Yeah. And then I'm like,
you're crying at this.
No, it was like someone switched up my meds. Like I was like laughing and then crying and then happy. And then all of a sudden we get into the draft and there's this tension and they're showing all three guys. And I'm kind of like, all right, they're showing all three guys. But I can't believe that all three of these kids are really sitting there not knowing who's going to go. And it was, the kid was genuinely, I can't get his name right. I don't have it written down in front of me. I can't do it. I'm not there yet. Yuri. I'm just not there yet, dude. I'm sorry. I'll get there. All right. I just read that name and it's tough for me. All right. You know, I'm bad with names.
Nervous.
He looks shocked. His parents are crying. They're showing Shane Wright. I'm going, boy, all right.
Right.
Hey, but I'm going, all right. That's tough break, but. Mm-hmm. It was not the shock of all shocks, right? Like, this wasn't the most shocking result ever. There was enough buzz. We looked at the odds yesterday, and Shane Wright was, I think only minus 225 to be first overall?
Less than that at one point. He was minus 125 at one point, and then when I went to look probably an hour before the bet, they were both plus money.
They were both plus money.
Because it was okay. Just like nobody knew what the hell was going on.
No, you know what, though? Like I said, the number one insider right now is the Vegas gambling lines. Oh, yeah. Like, that's the number one thing you should be looking at right now. Sorry. Like, that's, it's just, it's going to be.
And all of Elliot Friedman's tweets.
Yeah, but that's the battle. It's going to be Elliot versus the books. Yeah. Like, that's the battle right now. So Shane Wright, he doesn't get picked. Sovkovsky ends up going first overall.
Montreal boos doing my best. Him walking down.
I didn't hear the boos.
Oh, did they ever? There's boos when he was drafted first overall.
Maybe it was because I was like texting people. Like my phone obviously blew up and I immediately texted every single one of my Habs fans, friends. Well, just one word.
Can guess? Woof.
Bust.
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah, it was really close. Bust. Yeah.
No, he was being booed by the fans. He also got booed on the red carpet. And then some of his post availabilities, he was like, you know, I know they're just very passionate and hopefully I can change. He's such a cutie.
Yeah,
hopefully I can change their mind and we'll have something to play for this year. And then later on, about 10 picks in, he's walking through the arena and he's getting the big cheer. So yeah. I think it took people a little
that
bit of time.
Sucks.
The shock was there. Oh, but like, it's truly, he did get booed, which is kind of sad.
But I was going to say that they actually, Habs fans are kind of like Knicks fans, where there's just a different energy that they can bring when the building gets hot. But then they're also the losers that boo their pick like every year. It's just, you know, you guys are the best and then we give you credit and then you ruin it because you're also the worst. Like, that's the thing about you guys. But either way, I just think he looks like Terminator. When he walked down to the stage, I'm like, yeah.
He's a beast.
If you would have just brought in any random person and said, hey, we need to pick one of these guys first overall, which are you going to take?
Well, you know how many times you heard NHL-ready body last night?
Oh, that guy's
that could have been a drinking game.
That guy's a big old slab of meat. Like, that guy's...
You text me, he's a hunk of meat.
Yeah, that dude is...
You're not wrong.
No, that guy is big. Like, and yeah, they threw the Chara thing. Anyways, I loved it. I thought it was great. Then you assumed that Shane Wright was going to go number two or that New Jersey was going to move the pick.
Right.
Honestly, like, that was the two things that I was waiting for, was somebody's now going to trade up to get Shane Wright. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to happen here. Nope. Nemec. All right.
Do you start feeling bad at all for Shane Wright?
Absolutely not.
No, same.
Absolutely not. I don't feel bad for these guys at all. The only time that I feel bad for the lottery pick kids is when... Like, I don't feel bad for you that you didn't go first overall in the NHL draft. Like, okay, you went fourth. Like, no, man, you're fine. What I feel bad for, actually, is the kids who go to the green room and then they don't get picked the first day. Mm-hmm. That's always like, ouch. Or the kids who have draft parties and don't get picked at all.
Oh.
Those are the two where I go, oh, man, that stinks. That stinks. But Shane Wright is going, I'm not... passing four. And had he gone past four, I think that the internet, well,
that's
maybe
why
that's why it's not working. Yeah, exactly. Maybe it was because the Habs fans, they overloaded the servers. But Shane Wright falling to four, I'm accidentally wearing a Kraken hat today.
I see that.
But if you're a Kraken fan, you'd have to be so fired up. And did you see his stare at the Montreal table?
Okay, I needed to bring that up. This is like when I need... the A-list to have some sort of visual component because people listening right now need to go find this video. He's shaking hands on stage for the Seattle Kraken. And there is a moment that pierces your soul when he glares at the Montreal Canadiens draft table. And it's an evident turn of body, turn of head into their soul. I felt that so deep in my core. He wants to murder all of those men.
I love it. I hope the kid gets an opportunity to prove
him
wrong.
He's going to score four goals against them first time.
That where I was going with it next is what stinks is that he never gets to play them.
I know.
So there's never a chance. Like, that was the only thing that I really wanted was him not to go to a Western Conference team, because Montreal doesn't get punished for that at all if he turns out to be a stud, other than the fact that he's a stud. But even if he is, he's playing on the West Coast. Like, it's 10 o'clock at night. Yeah. And again, we've learned that ain't nobody on the East Coast staying up at 10 o'clock to watch Shane Wright in the Kraken.
He'd even say, he's like, there's going to be a chip on my shoulder for the rest of my career. It's like, you might have awoken a beast, a Kraken beast.
So, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I wish your phone and mic were down.
Too bad you can't turn me off now.
So the draft is just completely unhinged at this point. I'm losing my mind. I'm like, this is crazy. We got the Brinkett trade to just start this thing off. Everybody thinks that Chicago is a bunch of idiots. Then, like, Arizona, by the way, I didn't even mention, they've all got the same suit situation. They look like absolute dorks.
The worst thing ever.
Why did they do that?
I don't know. And it looks like, A, they were going to, like, a bachelor party or, like, going
no,
to
No, I know. It was embarrassing. I'm then, like, you guys are the least professional organization
so
in the building.
Awful.
And now you guys are the team that shows up like
and
a bachelor
party. Why are you showing up like that to, like, bring more attention
well,
to you?
Did you see Elliot's interview with the one guy? I think it was the GM where he goes, what's, he said something about the suits. He's like, these are our suits and someone made them. Elliot's like, okay. Like, it reminded me of Homer Simpson where he's like, I sleep in a bed with my wife. Like, it's like the guy was like, I sleep in a race car bed. And Elliot was like, yeah, sleep in a bed with my wife. It was just cringe. It was tough. Anyway, so congrats to Arizona because, yeah, like,
you must have got a good deal on, like, 10 for one.
When the broadcast is talking about you guys playing in the tiny barn and you guys are making moves at the draft, like, they just trading down. And
well, they got up on stage and they immediately thanked Arizona State
trading, yes,
for their hospitality. No, and they thanked their fans. And I'm like, wow, your fans, that's great.
Yeah, I just,
it was such a strange scenario.
I thought it was pretty cringe. I didn't really love it. We're gonna talk to Jason Bukola here for a second. The phone line's been down, but yeah, we're gonna fire up Jason here. Hey, Jason, what's going on, man?
Good morning. I apologize, technology.
It's our fault.
I don't think so. I think everything's down in Montreal here, too, so I have no idea. Not good.
Yeah,
but anyways, good morning.
Good morning.
So we were just talking about the reaction from us when we watched Shane Wright start to slip. And like, you, I read your piece before the draft, like your draft rankings. You didn't have him number one. I can't even remember if you actually even had him number two. But so it didn't feel like the shocker of all shockers. But once he started to, like, slip past three, What was the energy like in that building? Because it seemed hot in there that night.
Yeah, you know what? There was a lot of oohs and ahs. I'll put it to you that way. It was obviously highly anticipated that the kid was going to go potentially one. I mean, to be fair to Slavkovsky, the reaction in the building was kind, and then it just ramped up from there. It got crazy for Slavkovsky. But I think on the human side of it, guys, like, just human nature being what it is, I think we all kind of felt a little bit, he's the fourth overall pick, but didn't it feel to you guys that you almost felt a little sorry for the kid, you know, as he got to four? And I know that's a crazy thing to say, but the buildup was so, so overwhelming. And I actually didn't think it was fair. To your point, I didn't have him number one on my list to begin with, and I think that the hype and the media and everything was a little bit too much. But having said that, going to four at Seattle, what a great opportunity. Yeah. They're looking for a face of the franchise out there, and this is a great opportunity.
Yeah, and that looks like it'll be great for them. And this is that's actually one of the things you love the most as a fan. And any new fan can understand, hey, a player that slipped in the draft, right? Like, it's just an easy storyline to tell a new fan in Seattle, whatever. You're going to be excited about a pick like that. But what was your sense before? Because, yeah, you didn't have him number one. And it seemed like it's the bad break for him is that he was the consensus number one for so long, right? And it was just like so long. And I wondered if it was just a scenario where a guy is number one for such a long period of time that he just gets nitpicked over. Like, people start to go, well, here's the flaws because we've been seeing him for a couple of years. But it just, what was it in your opinion as to why he fell out of that spot?
Well, for me personally, from a hockey operations perspective.
Well, yeah, you got 19 years doing this, so yes, for you, not yeah, from me.
He wasn't the best player available on the board, and so I didn't have him number one. I did have him number two only because I do value centermen over wingers more. If I'm splitting hairs between a positional player and I value their skill set the same, I centermen are really hard to acquire at the NHL level, so I valued them a little bit higher than Slavkovsky there. But for me personally, I see where some people can look at it as a little bit of Shane Wright fatigue almost, but for me, just straight up, he wasn't the best player available on the board. I had Logan Cooley going number one. I think he's got the most upside offensively in the entire draft class. And I had Wright as a 1B NHL centerman, maybe a high-end 2, but a 1B at his ceiling is possible. He just wasn't the best player, and that's just a stark honesty about it.
So I don't have it in front of me because we have no internet. So if I get this right from memory, then, you know, I just want everybody to know that. It's a pretty big deal. But Leafs trade down from 25 to 38. They unload a contract. Again, you've got 19 years doing this. This is your 19th draft. In your piece, you wrote that scouts do between 175 to 200 games a year, 1,500 reports. How choked are the guys in the room when a team has only 3 picks and then they also trade down those slots?
Well, in this draft specifically, they didn't trade out of first-round potential candidates by going to 38. This draft, like on my list, as unusual as this may sound, I actually had 45 names on my list that could go in the first round of this draft, because that's how much parity there was at the back half of the top of the first round, if that's kind of a mouthful, but I hope you're following that.
No, I am. Well, that was going to be the follow-up question, though, is just like how much value did they lose here? And it really does seem like they didn't lose much at all to offload $7 million over 2 years.
I think it was a great move. To be honest, it was a great move. I'm staring at my list right now as I'm speaking to you, as I prepare to go back to the floor today, and I've got 15 names on my list still from last night that could have been potential first-round picks. The Leafs are going to get one of those players at 38 today. They've done well here. They've unloaded a contract that just wasn't going to work. That was not going to work in Toronto. It should never have arrived in the first place, and it's not going to work. So they unload it, and they go to 38. They're going to get a good player. They're going to get a good player. There's some really good names, including a couple of local players that one of them may fall in their lap at 38, and I guarantee they didn't expect that. So this is a good trade. The scouts will be motivated today. Because they know that their team, their NHL roster has potential to improve, and they still are going to get a good player.
Okay, Jason, give us some of the names, though. I want to know who they might be circling around that 38th pick. If it's best-case scenario, who do the Leafs end up with early, hopefully, this afternoon, not 17 hours like last night's draft was?
You know, some of the names that are still available, Ryan Chesley from the U.S. National Team Program, a transporting defenseman, right D, right shot. There's a small, energetic guy. We know how the Leafs like to trend with certain types of players. There's Lane Hudson, who's a smallish. He's 5'9", 160 pounds right now. Don't be misled by that. He's a Samuel Girard type of player in Colorado. The two kids in Mississauga, I think that the one kid in Mississauga, Owen Beck, who's a right-shot centerman, he might be available come that pick. And if they were able to acquire somebody like that, you're looking at a guy who is not only just offense, but a key player in the face-off circle, elite face-off, kind of like Claude Giroux in terms of his percentage-wise, taking face-offs on both sides of the ice. Other names, if they wanted to go safer, there's a Cali Odelius and Elias Salomonsson from Sweden, more kind of reliable. I'm not going to call them shutdown, but transporting pucks isn't their elite element. And if they wanted to go big, which would be kind of fun, wouldn't it? Noah Warren out of Gatineau is a 6'5", 225-pound defenseman who's still on the board as well. So
Jagr Furkus.
Yeah, Jagr Furkus is where I was going last. And
nice.
I don't know if you guys were watching it last night or not, but they took a headshot of Jagr in the stands. What an awesome mug. The guy's got a big salad.
You need him.
Oh, my God. Like, I can just see the emojis coming out if they ever pick them. That fits their mold, right? So that's where I was going last. Like, if he's on the board, I don't see them passing on Furkus. He'd definitely go to the Leafs, I believe.
Okay, I love it. I love the idea of maybe a local guy, too, because, you know, one day he might take a hometown discount, which will help the Leafs down the road. Okay, before we let you go, who won the draft, in your opinion? You know, a lot of moves last night, a lot of trades, but if you had to pick one team, who's the winner?
My winner was the Minnesota Wild. They picked up Liam Ågren, you know, towards the middle of the first round, captain of Team Sweden at the under-18s, winner, character, played through a high ankle sprain. Anybody who's been an athlete knows how difficult that can be. Did that, piggybacked the team to a championship. And then they picked Danila Yurov after that, later in the first round. He's a top five talent. Like, this kid could be Kaprizov-like in his impact in the NHL. That was the most, that pick there, that showed how Bill Guerin really doesn't care about outside noise. He just went after the very best player on the board, took it, and that kid could be a home run. Like, I'm talking star potential. So they won the first round for me.
Yeah, a lot of Leaf fans were hoping that he was going to slip into that slot. He had a lot of buzz for people hoping that he was going to be there at 25. Jason, you did great last night. Again, congrats on the 19th draft. Again, there's a ton of your work that's up on sportsnet.ca right now, and we look forward to watching today.
Great. Have a good day, guys. Thank you.
Take care, man. Jason Bukla, 19 years scouting in the NHL, director of amateur scouting in some spots. Good dude. There's a good job by the panel last night.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, so let's get into the Leaf stuff, because that's what everybody's here for. That's what everybody cares about, all right? Center of the universe. Habs fans did great. Woo-hoo. Good for you guys. I can't believe Jason's up at 7 o'clock after being in Montreal for that draft. Like, I got to tell you, like, oof. Tough look.
You
know, I kind of want you to sleep in through our hit at 7 o'clock in Montreal on Friday, all right? Like, I can't believe that you agreed to do that. So, this was the big question to ask Jason, because I don't know. Like, I hear some things and read some things and whatever. And the whole thing was that, hey, this draft is X amount of prospects deep. There's a top 10 and then there's a shelf, and then the shelf falls off and then there's another 10 guys. Mm-hmm. That's always the way that these things go. But when the trade happened, I got to admit, I was pretty stunned. And I think that, okay, I hate giving general managers too much credit when they make trades to get off of salaries that they signed. Like, it's one thing when Dubas comes in and takes over for Lou and has to offload Nikita Zaitsev's 7-year deal, right? Because, hey, he didn't have anything to do with that. And now he's got to work from a disadvantageous position to get rid of an awful contract. That stinks. That is a place where you're supposed to give guys credit. When you sign someone a year ago to a contract that, when everyone saw it, went, pardon me for the hurt guy who never wins ever? That's who you gave all the 3-year contract? 3 years? What's going on here? I think the year before, Dubas kind of panicked with the goalie market. Like, they knew they weren't going to be able to get into the Linus Allmark territory, like that class of goalies. And I think that he panicked and overshot the market and locked up Mrazek to a deal that turned out to be way over market value, both in term and in dollars. And that they were so nervous about two things. One, they knew that they had broken their relationship with Freddie Anderson, and they knew that that was one of the goalies that was already off the market for them, essentially. And I don't say that they broke it, because I think that was both sides. And you saw a little bit of that, how that played out with Freddie this year in Carolina. He played hurt once, and he felt like it cost him, and he was never going to do it again. Jack Campbell was unproven. He had health issues of his own. They panicked. They jumped the market. That's just the way that it went down. They went early. You remember that Mrazek contract signed quick. It was too fast. Yesterday, though, when I saw Marc-Andre Fleury go off the board and then the Gorgiev price, I went, whoa, that's like, it's not a lot for Gorgiev. What was it, like, a couple thirds, future thirds and a fifth, like nothing major. But I went, okay, those guys have priced themselves out of Kemper. They already know that that's the deal. All right. So those goalies are going to cost a decent chunk of money. I wonder what the Leafs are going to do. I just think that if there's a loser from yesterday, it's Chicago.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Not only did you make the DeBrincat trade, it just kind of feels like you gave the Leafs a free pass on that contract. Certainly. Like, what happened? I thought a year ago or last deadline, it was going to cost a first round pick outright to get off of the Peter Mrazek contract. It was going to cost a prospect outright to get off the Peter Mrazek contract. So some of this is expectation from Leaf fans and Leafs commentators and NHL at large of how much that salary cap space was worth. But to see the Leafs dump that deal, free up $3.5 million this year on their cap right before free agency, for a trade down of what equated to what?
13 picks.
Yeah, that's a coup. Like, this is what I'm saying. It's like, I don't want to give Dubas credit for that. But it's like, mm-hmm. how do you not? How do you not give him credit for that? Like, I saw somebody tweet this yesterday. I can't remember who it was because I thought it was a good tweet, but it was like, everybody makes mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody makes mistakes.
But a good GM is somebody that can find a way to correct it.
That's life. That's anybody. Like, everybody makes mistakes. How do you rebound from your mistakes? So for Kyle Dubas, shout out to Kyle Dubas, man. Like, that's a golf clap from old JD over here. Like, yeah, dude, you blew it last year. You jumped the market. You signed Mrazek. It bit you in the ass, whatever. Didn't really hurt them all that bad, though, if you think about it now. Like, yeah, could they have used that money last year on something better? Sure. Mm-hmm. But they obviously had that allotment for goaltenders. And if you look at what Jack was making, what they paid for goalies last year was pretty damn friendly. Like, what were they going to sprinkle the money around for extra last year? So I'm just saying, from an opportunity cost standpoint, all right, everybody looking back at the opportunity cost, what did Mrazek actually hurt? Maybe some deadline flexibility. But he didn't overreact at the deadline to dump that contract. Mm-hmm. Nice. And then he goes into this offseason, doesn't overreact to get off the contract too early, waits to the draft, and then pounces on Chicago, who seems to be just like completely asleep at the wheel here. Like, and again, I don't know why the values are changing so much, because we just heard that cap space is the most valuable thing. Nobody has cap space. The price of acquiring cap space is going to be, you're going to have to pay. Look at all the teams that need cap space. And then Kyle Dubas is getting off of $7 million over 2 years for a trade down. Huh?
With that guy, Kyle Davidson, that had a little bit of bad blood at times. Looks like they've made it up.
I guess they have. Yeah, the two BFFs Kyles. Now. The two Kyles are cool.
The two young Kyles. But I think the problem here that I saw, and I know you're not always on Twitter anymore, but the fan base quite divided last night. Instant reaction was like, well, how can we, you know, be happy with this trend of losing first round draft picks that seems to happen every single year where the Leafs don't draft in the first round, I think since like 2019. Okay. That's a fact. That's a stat. I understand that. But the difference between the first round, we just talked to Jason Buchla, and 13 picks, like, the difference is not significant this year. Maybe there's previous drafts where that was a huge issue to lose a drop down of that point of the stature, but it doesn't seem like that's the case this year. And you just laid it out. Like, somebody kind of took the Leafs and helped them, which never happens. This isn't the Tampa Bay Lightning.
They needed a goalie, and they
they still do.
And they
No.
I mean, Chicago had nothing in net.
And maybe Mrazek goes there and does okay.
They want to hit the cap floor, mm-hmm. so it suits them in that regard. He's a potential bounce back candidate that a year from now you could end up trading. I don't know. It's not. I'm just saying I see it from their perspective. I didn't understand the value that they got back. But let's go through that Dubas thing about like not having first round picks and everyone hating the trend. Like, to me, again, I think that every team does make mistakes. Go through the league and look at all the free agency signings. There's no GM out there that's like, perfect season with signings. No, everybody makes mistakes, okay? I'm not excusing those mistakes. That's your job to limit them, right? But that's pretty decent damage control, I would say. Dubas signed two bad contracts that were pretty panicky. He sucked in free agency last year from a standpoint of spending money. He was good with the guys that he didn't have to spend any cash on. Kampf, coup. Bunting, coup. Awesome. Kasha, kind of a wash. Like, there was a Kasha moment, but at the end of the year, you kind of went, what did they get out of him? Like, not really much. You know, like some early season buzz, but at the end of the day, he had zero force in the postseason. So, two bad contracts. But again, what did it cost you from an opportunity cost standpoint? What would you have had the Leafs do with that money from last year that would have been materially better than what they used it on? Because again, they would have had to spend money on another goalie. They had to. They weren't going into the season with Sjogren. So anybody who's talking about that crazy kind of stuff, or you're being nutso, all right? You're lying. You're just trying to be a Dubas hater at this point. And I get it. This is why it's polarizing, is because Dubas is polarizing and this team is polarizing. So I don't blame any fans that are pissed off about the quote-unquote trend. And again, I don't think it's good overall business to constantly be shedding assets to get rid of contracts he signed. I prefaced this with, this is not overall a good thing. What I will say, though, is that go back. 2019, they don't have their pick. Why? Because he had to get off Marleau. That's a contract that I'm talking about he didn't sign. Mm-hmm. I think everybody knows that I'm not like some Kyle Dubas like sycophant, right? Like, this is pretty clear that I am not one of those people who just like, every time he does a move, goes, Kyle Dubas the GOAT! Kyle Dubas the GOAT! Like, that's not me. Then he signs the Nick Ritchie contract. Or sorry, the 2021, he moves for, or the following draft pick, he moves for, in the trade. with Columbus mm-hmm. for Nick Foligno. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to do that deal. There were some people that thought it was an overpay. There were some people that thought Nick Foligno had already lost a step, whatever. The Leafs needed to move their first round pick that year. They absolutely had to. They were in the North Division. They were by far the best team. They had a path to the Stanley Cup. Using your first round pick at the deadline that year, you can argue they could have used it differently, but mm-hmm. they were using that first round pick, like one way or the other. And Nick Foligno got hurt. He had back issues that were so bad that he could barely get out of bed, and the guy still played. So hard for me to really criticize that one. I liked it in the moment, and I think the Leafs needed to use that pick. They picked up a first rounder, by the way, to get Rodion Amarov. That's just a bad break. The kid's sick. I hope he does well. Mm-hmm. But that's just a bad bounce. He did a good job of picking up a pick for Kasperi Kapanen that everybody knew needed to go. And really, a first-round pick for Kasperi Kapanen, if you look at like what the market was right now, that was a nice piece of business, especially considering that was like 16th overall, I think, or 15th overall. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like 28. And then this year, again, you just heard from a guy who's been in the NHL for 19 years doing this, talking about this draft. And it's not like the be-all and end-all, but that was pretty consensus that this was a deeper draft, but not one that was star-studded in the top 20s. There was no player there. If you're a fan right now saying, there was a guy at 25, and I was saying they should have taken... Relax. Like, you're lying. You never saw these dudes. You have no idea. So for Dubas and his scouting department, that would have had time to look at this and say, we've got one pick in this spot. Everyone wanted them to trade back anyways. So what? You're mad because Dubas used the trade back to not acquire two more picks instead of getting off of something that obviously is going to help them more? Like, what are you talking about? That was a good piece of business. You can't be mad at that. You just cannot be mad at that. You can be mad about the Mrazek signing, but that move right there was awesome. That was a coup. I was shocked. I almost dropped my phone. I couldn't believe it ended up happening. So again, shout out to Kyle Dubas because that was a really, really tidy piece of work. If you're mad about it, text away, fire it away. Tweet at me if you have a phone. I don't care. I do not care. That was a good piece of work for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And now the question is, what do they do with that flexibility?
So that's where I'm at now. And maybe you hold on to your emotions and your reactions to see what's next. And I get that two things can be true. You can hate the fact that they lost another first round draft pick and that this is becoming a trend, but you can also give him praise for being able to recover it. Okay. Maybe you're not saying that this is the best thing of all time, but now they have enough cap space to do something. And Dubas post media availability says, with the cap space we have now, every option is available to us in the goalie hunt. That wasn't the case 12 hours ago.
Here's the caveat to this though now. If you blow this, that's your ass.
So that's what I'm saying. You hold on a little bit, guys. Everybody listening that was quick to Twitter to say that this was the worst decision of all time.
No, but I get it from their standpoint too, for this reason, Ailish, is that it's like, if you're a Leafs fan right now, you're tired of just being told that Dubas is doing a great job and your team hasn't gotten out of the first round the entire time he's been here. And you're tired of being told like every move he makes is awesome. And then you look at it and go, yeah, but all right, if you're not getting out of the first round, then I would like to have first round picks. All right, it's not even that they don't have, that they traded back. They only have three picks in this draft too. Like, this isn't just they only traded out of one of their value spots. It's mm-hmm. like, no, they had one pick. Then it was the third rounder, and then what is it, a seventh rounder that they have the other one of? It's like, they only have three picks in this draft. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not enough bullets. Hockey is about having bullets in the draft. It's like the NFL draft. Once you start to get deeper, you just want to have volume because it's a crapshoot. So much of this is a crapshoot. So not having any bullets is an indictment of this front office right now in terms of what they've done and what they've accomplished. So if you're a Leaf fan that's frustrated, I'm not saying I don't understand you. I'm just saying in a vacuum, this one move, this one trade was a good trade.
Yes.
And now they have flexibility. And now, so Darcy Kemper's out there. I don't really know why fans want Kemper more than Jack, I'll be honest. Like, this, my position is that they should be going back to Jack Campbell and saying, hey, let's figure this out. You
maybe
take a
that's
discount.
Why they did this.
Yeah. You take a discount. We'll pay you a little bit. We'll give you that extra year term that you want. You can't give them 4 years, unfortunately. I don't think anyway. I think you can max out at three. Mm-hmm. But you give them that third year. You pay them over four, maybe four and a half. And you say, the team likes you. You've been really good here. You found yourself here. We know that you can handle the stresses of the market. You've matured here. And you've played well in the postseason. And he's had some bad, I would say, moments in the postseason. Game 7 against Montreal, that was a soft goal.
But he wasn't the reason that they lost it.
Absolutely not. I just, to me, if you're looking at the available options in the goaltending market right now.
Well, Marc-Andre Fleury is gone.
It's gone.
We said
that's it.
Two shows ago, what would you? Who's your top pick? Well, we both agreed that Marc-Andre Fleury, because we thought Jack Campbell was out of the conversation at that point, would be your best bet. He's gone. I don't see a major needle move between Kemper and Campbell.
Exactly. If there was a big difference between those two, where I thought Kemper just showed, like, I know he just won a Stanley Cup, but again, they swept the Oilers without him. Like, the story of the Colorado Avalanche was not goaltending, and it was not Darcy Kemper. And I don't know, again, how much he was. You've seen the pictures of his eye after he got, right? Like, he was obviously dealing with it. He battled. He came in there. He was good. He was quality, right? Like, he was good against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But it wasn't a scenario where I thought, wow, Darcy Kemper is what is the missing ingredient for the Leafs. To be honest, I think that my ideal Leafs goaltending situation now would be bring back Jack Campbell, number one. Number two, Ville Husso. Sure. Number three, Darcy Kemper. Because if you're not bringing back Jack, I want that to be viewed as, well, we just don't believe in paying goaltenders anymore. Like, we don't want to pay guys that are not absolute superstars at the position and give them any term. Because Jack and Kemper might price themselves out of the market. Edmonton is going to be aggressive. They moved Cassian for cap space too. Mm-hmm. And I think people thought of Andrew
Cassian
Kane.
That was more expensive in a worse trade, I think, than what the Leafs did yesterday.
It was definitely more expensive. I don't know if it was worse because, like, again, those middle picks, I always wonder, like, what's the slot worth? But no, I'd rather have the bullets than the slot. So I'm with you on that. Like, I agree. I'd like to see them either decide philosophically they're not going in on goaltenders for big money anymore until the right one emerges.
How about a cheap Matt Murray?
No.
Who said that he'd be interested in playing for the Leafs? You could get him on a cheap little deal.
Of course he'd be interested.
Deal.
He should be interested in playing for anybody because his career, he hasn't played I think he's played 50 games once since his first two seasons in Pittsburgh, which again, he was also hurt for. I just think that if you're talking about what I want to see in net, I don't want the Leafs to be in lottery ticket land here. Like, I think lottery ticket land is nice as a second guy. So if you're telling me they go get Jack and they bring in Murray, then I can hear that out on a discounted rate.
Yeah, yeah, no.
But,
of course, I think that if someone retained 50% of his salary.
50% of his salary, he's still $3 million.
And he's a backup option. Is he better than Shalgren? I don't know.
No, I'm good on that. If you can.
Could happen, though.
No, if you could get him for cheaper than that, sure. But no, not at. I don't want to be involved in the Matt Murray saga. And I loved Matt Murray, when he was younger with Pittsburgh and when I thought he was going to be Team Canada's future goalie.
Well,
it's
out there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not. If I'm them, that's why I would have acted with more desperation to get rid of that Mrazek contract to make sure that I wasn't in this position. I don't want to overpay for anything. I think that overpaying is something that the Leafs don't have the luxury of. They're supposed to be a team that doesn't need elite goaltending. They need good goaltending, right? They need passable guys that don't kill them. And guess what? That's Jack Campbell. The devil you know is Jack Campbell. The question is, and I want to ask Kipper, I want to get him on at 8 o'clock, is has the damage been done here with those two camps? Was it actually sour? Because it kind of seemed a little bit like it was sour. It seemed like the Leafs weren't in on him. And it seems like if you're Jack and you proved what you did over the last 2 years with the Leafs and that they lowballed you in the season and then didn't even talk to you up until this point, that I wouldn't be feeling any warm and cuddlies about taking a little less money to stay here. I would want to be exploring my options.
They're kind of crawling back to saying,
big
hey,
time.
We're back. We can give you more money.
So it'll be interesting to see how that relationship was maintained because to me right now, assuming Kemper makes more than Jack, I would say Jack Campbell is still the number one option for the Toronto Maple Leafs in terms of ideal
Even
fits
if they make
right
the
now.
The same amount of money. I still think there's value in getting Jack Campbell, someone that has, as you mentioned, the relationship, knows the market, you've seen him.
There's more runway with Kemper, though, and he did just win a cup. So I would say that at even money, you could talk me into Kemper.
All right.
I thought you said
that he wasn't part of really a defining reason that the Avs won.
But he still did stand tall against Tampa and played well. And he did battle back, and I just mean his track record over his career is longer and deeper with more pedigree than Jack.
I guess a good problem to have because I feel like it's between those two. And we're not saying, oh my God, it has to be one over the other.
I think that it has to be one of those two guys or Ville Husso, it's a nightmare.
Who else is it?
Well, that's what I mean. Otherwise, it's a nightmare where you're trying to take a trade from somebody of a diminished asset.
Maybe you have enough now with Gibson to make something work. He's the only other person.
Here's why I don't like the Gibson thing. I don't like that it puts you into uncomfortable territory with the term. I wonder how much of a piece of this is with Jack and with Kempers and with them getting off this contract and wanting to be short term. Again, this is why it stinks that they couldn't get in on Fleury. And I wonder why that wasn't a little bit more feasible to them, because having guys on 2-year deals so that you know when Matthews and Nylander are up, that you have cost certainty, that there's less guys on the book, the better. The less guys on the book, the better for me, that aren't on super friendly contracts when those two guys come up. Like, I don't want the Leafs to be in a position where they can't pay William Nylander. Like, all right, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, 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 yum.
What do you got?
It's not hockey related, sorry.
It's okay.
Our whole schedule's a little thrown off, but it is basketball related. How about that?
It's a big zag, but okay.
KD yesterday floated. I mean, it's been quiet since the whole Raptors.
Don't look at me like that and say KD, because that is almost like you're breaking news to me.
No.
And I I was like, don't look at me like that and say it that way. What is it? What did he tweet?
No,
like, that's
the Brooklyn Nets asked the Minnesota Timberwolves for Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, I saw this.
Anthony Edwards, and 4 draft picks in exchange for Kevin Durant. Obviously, that was declined.
What was the Raptors one like this from a year ago? There was some trade a year or so ago where somebody asked the Raptors for, like, basically everything for, like, I wish I could remember this. Somebody, if we have any listeners, text it in, do whatever. But
Google
the Raptors
it.
Had one like this. I'm just blanking on it. But there was some trade offer that Raptors fans balked at, that they could not believe. They were incensed that people would have even considered an ad. Oh, it was Daryl Morey. Daryl Morey, what did he ask for?
We'll find it.
I can't remember what he asked for.
I'll send a carrier pigeon.
It was outrageous. And people were laughing at it all around the internet.
But this is like, the question are the Nets completely out of their minds? Yes. But is this even more a reason that he stays? Because there's no one matching anything that they're requesting.
I think that, yeah, you're right. Those are the right questions to ask. Number one, though, is who cares? If the GM's asking for, like, everybody out here has to be the dumbest negotiator ever. Like, you always ask for an outrageous offer at first. Like, ask for something outrageous. What is going to hurt you in that? Like, ask for something really high. Mm-hmm. My strategy has actually usually been asked for what you think is fair, and I think that should be higher. I think that that's wrong. Well,
that makes sense.
So I'll criticize myself in that. But you gotta think to yourself, why not ask? Why not start the conversation there so they go, obviously,
but
we're
not
doing
that. But does that turn off other teams that are like, this is ridiculous?
No, I don't think so, because every other team is going to be still having conversations. Like, we're getting, this is so funny. This is like social media. This is classic social media, where there's all this nuance and discussion where these two teams would have talked and talked and talked, and they're talking to every single team. Mm-hmm. And these guys would have said, this is our asking price if we want it done today. And they go, absolutely not. And then someone from their front office leaks it because they want them to look ridiculous. They want this conversation to be spurred, and they want pressure on that. Who has something to gain here? So, yeah, I think that they would be doing their due diligence, and this is what you want from an organization, is to really push for as much as you can get. But ultimately, yeah, like, these stories are kind of non-stories to me when they end up happening. Do we still have no one that reminded the Raptors thing?
No.
Okay, whatever. It's fine. Everybody's listening to this podcast. Honest to God, if you're downloading this podcast, if you're listening to this podcast right now, you better leave a review. All right? I ran into work today for you. I came in here to give you my Jack Campbell thoughts. All right? I was all fired up for Jack Campbell. Anyway, let's take a break and let's do an abbreviated A-list. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ayler, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, Tom Brady. He's always in the news, right? Like, it's just, you can't go a week without a Tom Brady A-list, but this one will spark some conversation.
I think that's a you thing, honestly. Like, you're like, we can't go a week without Tom Brady on the A-list.
He's the only one that does anything
you
lately.
You make that list.
It's the summer.
Yeah, no.
He wants to be in the news. He does a good job of providing
content
for us.
When we started the A-list, I remember we talked about it, and I went, just do whatever you want to do. Yeah. Any story from around the world. And A-list was like, he just keeps it on the handsome quarterback that I like from my favorite team, the Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
He keeps ending
That's
up on
right.
the A-list. What's up?
Okay, so, you know, he can afford to drive any car on
sure
the planet.
Can.
their combined network of him and Giselle could actually afford to buy a racing team.
It's net worth, not network, but yeah.
I'm thinking too much about the network being down, all right?
Okay.
He's got a $3 million Bugatti.
Yeah.
Aston Martin Rolls Royce Ghost, limited edition Aston Martin Vanquish.
Okay.
Audi R8, Tesla, etc.
Okay. Got it.
You know it.
He's got cars. He's rich.
When he was asked what his favorite vehicle was.
Oh, he's going to say something lame. Can I guess?
Yeah.
He's going to say his favorite vehicle is, okay, I don't think he's the type. Tom Brady's a...
Wait, can I give you what he explained it as? Maybe it'll help.
No. I don't want to hint. I'm just working this out.
Nearly perfect vehicle is how he explained what his number one favorite is.
So I think that he's not the type because he knows his like Tom Brady base to go Tesla. Because I think people would interpret that as like a political thing. So he's like, nah, I'm not going with that. I think he would go with an American-made car. I think that's Tom Brady. He's America. Tom Brady's America.
That's correct.
I don't think he's going to go.
It is an American-made car. I just had to double check.
Yeah, I don't.
I knew that, but now I'm embarrassed.
Oh my God. Don't let it. What? Now I almost want to know what the thing is. So what you had to Google. You shouldn't have said you had to Google this. So I was going to say, because a lot of people would have gone with like a Toyota who are like, oh, it's reliable. It's like, no, he's not doing that.
He's not driving a Toyota.
He's going American made. I swear to God, I haven't seen the story.
Okay. So guess.
Is it a Chevrolet?
It's a Ford F-150 Raptor.
Oh, actually, that's pretty cool, though.
But he says that's his nearly perfect vehicle. Yeah. This is the reasoning. They're bigger. We're bigger guys. You're going to need a lot of room.
Yeah, see, this is America.
You're 320 pounds.
That's America. We're bigger.
You got a size 17 shoe.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I didn't do that commercial.
Yeah, do it.
You want to be from America? You want to drive Raptor? We're bigger. You wear a size 17 shoe. Raptor.
This is Kevin Barker.
By Ford. That was pretty good.
That was good. I'd buy one. He also announced or revealed that the first vehicle he ever bought for $500.
I was going to guess Ford Mustang, but I wouldn't have won, but I should have gone with
the first vehicle. Okay, how about this? The first vehicle he ever purchased for $500 for his sister.
No idea.
A 1967 Dodge Dart.
Sick. That's a big time skid car.
When you say the word skid, it makes me laugh.
Well, it's just a fact. That's a fact. Anyways, let's take a break. Let's come back because the real Kipper is here.
Hey.
Wow. Whoa, the real Kipper is here. Woo! Play the music. All right, let's take a break. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Naylor, Sports 5 9 of the Fan.